The Coast 89.7 is proud to present the latest edition of our radio documentary series produced with the financial support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program. Curating Cape Breton's Multicultural Mosaic, a dedication to diversity past and present, is a Coast 89.7 original production. And now, The Story of Home with your host, Donnie Antle.
Welcome to The Story of Home. I'm Donnie Antle. In this episode, we'll take a look at three Cape Breton business owners who saw opportunity here and decided they were open for business. In the heady days of steel and coal, Cape Breton attracted entrepreneurs in all kinds of businesses, from grocery stores to clothing stores to radio stations. Of course, in recent years, it would seem that opportunities for the independent business person have diminished. With our population in decline, it would seem there's not much reason to open up shop here. So here are three business people who've proven that conventional wisdom wrong. We met A.J. Balyan earlier in this series, in our episode on international students. He came to Cape Breton in 2017 to study public administration at CBU. He says it was while he was a student that he realized his fellow students were underserved when it came to their dining options.
When I was in my second semester, I realized that there's nothing to eat for us here, for the most of the students. For us that we used to eat in India, from the northern part, from southern part, that we used to eat at home, the homemade dishes, like the real Indian dishes, we didn't find any place to eat here. And for us, it's a little expensive as well to go out every day and to do the stuff like that. So at that time, I realized to open a restaurant and to serve the students, to serve the Canadians, what really Indian food is. So now, around 6 Canadians support, 6-7 Canadians support me to do this. To be honest, just support me. They was like, oh, just do it, we're going to invest in you. Just do it, we're going to support you. Just do it, we're going to help you in everything. So one of my landlords, one of my professors, they supported me a lot.
He soon realized it wasn't just Indian students who enjoyed Indian food, so he decided to enter the restaurant business.
I invited them at my home for the food, and then they realized, oh, this is a real Indian taste, like the tandoori dishes. There's no one here making the tandoori dishes. The tandoori is just like a oven. It's a clay oven. It's a clay inside. It's cooked in the clay, not in the flame. It's cooked in the clay. So that taste we miss really here. The real roti is chapati that we eat every night at our home, made up of our mothers. We eat every night, so we miss that stuff here as well. Those, because it's hard to make those rotis at home while we come from the university and then go to work and then came to home in the night. It's really hard for us to make food as we used to it. And then we just stick to the burgers. And then I really realized just to open a restaurant here.
AJ says the people he met in the community were a huge help in getting his restaurant ready to serve its first meal.
Not the financial investors. They're the investors who supports me, who helped me a lot in to getting the permits, to getting, because I was a student. I was not able to do on my own everything. Mm-hmm. Because some of the, I'll not enclose the names, some of the inspectors here, some of the CBRM police, those guys, some in the municipality, they helped me a lot to do my business here, to get the permits, to get renovation permits, to get some clearances. They helped me a lot because I like the people here the most. They're the best ones in all of the world. They're supportive. They are just a family here. I never miss my family to be with them. Whenever I was with them, because I used to live with a guy here. He was my landlord, and he's a really good guy. Really good guy. He appreciates me every time. Every time supports me to find the place, where to do the business, where to do this, where to do this. So those are the main investments for me. The financial investments are something different. I worked on my own 95 hours a week in the summers last year. So that's why I earned my money and to put here. It took me like around 1.5 years to come here. I was doing my own renovations here from last 1.5 years. And after all those struggle with my friends as well, all my friends supports me to do my renovations. And then we are on the final stage here.
Today, he's the owner of Swagat, the real taste of India. He serves fine Indian cuisine to all comers at his Prince Street restaurant, both international student and Cape Bretoner alike. I asked him what the name of his restaurant signified.
Swagat means to welcome. Like in India, it's our native language, Hindi. We call like Swagat. Swagat means welcome. Like whenever you come to someone's place, they greet you by saying Swagat. That aapka Swagat hai. You are welcome, as in same in Canada. So that's why we name it Swagat. You're welcome.
And AJ's restaurant welcomes diners in search of real Indian food every day.
Well, I guess the old town has changed since the day I left home. The city is home to me for now, but it's not where I belong. Sometimes this place seems like a prison, waiting for the day I'll be free. And all the things you take for granted are the things that I never see. So give me my home on the island. Give me my home by the sea, where the water's so blue and the meadow so green. Cape Breton, you belong to me. Every day seems to grow longer without my family and friends. But when I'm feeling blue, I think
In recent years, a new dance studio has opened in Sydney, Concept Creative Dance. The studio is a labor of love for its owner, Chitsanzo McCandewire. Chitsanzo came to Cape Breton in 2013 with his family. His father had just taken a teaching position at CBU. Born in Malawi and raised in Dresden, Germany, Chitsanzo says his first impression of Cape Breton was the quiet.
I grew up in Dresden, eastern city in Germany. I have always enjoyed and appreciated the sound of a highway next to my bed. And it doesn't, this is not sarcasm, but it gives you a weird sense of security when you just hear cars in the middle of the night and you can count them out and fall asleep to them. And we've always lived next to a highway, in the middle of the highway, like the one big city that runs through town and out of town. And it was very, very quiet the first couple nights, and it was so uneasy. I just remember the first two nights just like laying in my bed, staring up the wall and being like, it's quiet. Like, that was like a thought that was like running through my head. It's like, it is quiet. Like, not just like silent, it's like quiet, quiet. There's nothing like happening here. And because we arrived in the middle of the night, it just was like that uneasiness of like, because we flew into Halifax and we didn't know the distance from Halifax to Sydney. At that time, we just were like, okay, so this will be like maybe a 2-hour trip, maybe like a 50-minute trip. Those 4 hours hit us hard. And that was before the bypass, before the new highway up in Antigonish. So you would still drive straight through Antigonish and like see all of the houses like in the middle of town, which makes you feel very uneasy about Antigonish because it's just like a dead city in the summer. So you would be driving through this potentially dead-seeming city, through another dead-seeming city, and through all of the woods where you literally can only see like 100 meters ahead of you and you hear nothing. That was the first time I was really uneasy about like moving to this space.
Still, he came to appreciate the quiet life of Cape Breton.
It just gives you an appreciation and easiness about like this, like all of the areas that I walk around that I didn't have in Germany. Germany was nice and beautiful, but it was not an atmosphere where like I felt secure 100% of the time. The first time I went to school here, I felt at ease. Nobody was staring at me because I was just one of the other kids. Also one of the other black kids. So yeah, it was just like that normalcy for the first time in a long time.
From a young age, Chitsanzo has loved to dance. He told me the story of the first money he earned through dance.
Dance was always in my life is because the tribe I come from has a wedding dance. And I used to be always participating in weddings a lot. So I would always be dancing the wedding dance. I was not supposed to. People thought it was cute. I continued doing the wedding dance. I remember like that one time where my uncle, when you sit in African weddings, everybody who is part of like the bridal party sits on like a pedestal, like a throne. And I remember this was the wedding of my aunt, Auntie Tina. Wonderful woman. Sometimes she's funny. But at her wedding, my uncle, who was like standing behind, like sitting behind me, like tapped me on my shoulder and was like, here, I'll give you $50 in African money, so approximately $5. I'll give you $50 if you go up there and you dance. So I went up there and I danced. I came back and he was like, you get $50 every single time you go up. That night, I made my first 15 Canadian dollars and $150 of dance money. And I just continue enjoying dancing like that. But I didn't start taking it serious until approximately 2004. We had moved. We've been living in Germany at that point for 4 years. School isn't difficult, but like just being in Germany is difficult. And I clicked on MTV, I think. They were streaming the Red Bull BC One like breakdancing competition. They were hosting it on the platform like for day TV, like none of the prime spots. They're just hosting it because like MTV back in the day was heavy into hip hop. And Sway was like hosting it. I remember Sway because he still wears that same hat up to now. And I watched Sway and I recognized Sway because he was on every single thing hip hop related. And I was very heavy into hip hop at the time because that was the only place you could see other black people in a country where literally nobody else was black. And I watched that competition and I looked at it and I was like, this is interesting. I should learn more about it. And I just started diving into learning how to dance from that point.
He had to learn his dance moves on his own.
And I came to the style called popping. And back in the day, I was like a chubby kid. So I couldn't do all of the fancy stuff and I couldn't find a studio to dance. And we couldn't afford a studio at the time because both of my parents were students. They were both master students and PhD students. And I couldn't afford sending me to a dance school, which I think is the best decision. And I started watching videos and learning from online tutorials on how to dance. Watched music videos to learn how to dance, and we had like a TV show every single weekend that was called Relax. I don't know why they called the show like that, but they would teach like a hip hop move at the end of each one from a well known dance group called Flying Steps. And I would binge watch it, learn every single move, practice, and keep on going. And that's how I like started building my dance vocabulary out of like the many different moves that I have now.
He did get introduced to some teachers eventually just before he moved here.
So I continued focusing on another style, which is breaking, which I was taught in 2012. Yeah, I was taught in 2012 and from many different teachers, but some of the biggest influences from me learning was a group called the Saxons that literally formed in 2012. And their goal was to foster a lot of youth. And my dance teacher for break dancing, like breaking, introduced me to them. And we went on to an entire week full of workshops while I was living at his space. For an entire week, I learned everything there is about breaking, from how to do power moves, how to do stacking, learned about every single thing there is to have a foundation, to be able to pass it on and to teach it. Because at that point, I was like a beginner. And what was less than a beginner. But at that point, it was like I had learned enough that I can continue on this path on my own. And that's something that I'll always be grateful for that like, for my teacher taking me into his space, like living with him for that 1 week where I learned as much as I could. And then moving to Cape Breton immediately after, where like, I have to work on this on my own.
Not having others around him to dance with led him to open Concept Creative.
You realize so much about, like you learn so much on your own. And at the same time, you learn the importance of a dance community when you're dancing alone. It's because it was great to be able to focus on moves on your own, but at the same time, it was really difficult to keep on dancing if nobody around you dances. And that's the reason why I started my studio.
It wasn't just a love of dance, but also a love of teaching that motivated him.
Like realizing the joy of teaching is also one of those moments that made me continue, like go further. Then realizing that like at a young age that this is not just like a fun thing, But, like, you can make a little bit of money with it on top of having fun. And then realizing, okay, there's different styles that you can focus on made me just want to go further with dance. And it is just like those combination of tiny little moments in my life that confirmed, like, this is something that is for me.
It all started with one summer session.
I honestly thought that, like, this was going to be a one-off summer thing. Like, I didn't plan further than a summer ahead. And then, like, the first session that I hosted was, like, I had $250 in my account, and the space I was booking was $250. I was just going to see if, like, hey, is this going to work out? Like, is this going to take on a life of its own that I will make a decent amount of money over this summer that I can keep myself, like, busy? And back then, I lowballed and essentially put a class on $5, expecting to lose all of my money that I would have invested in the year. I ended up selling out my first session and then skipped on selling out a second session. So I sold out two sessions. I was only planning to host one session. And I broke even and I made like a profit of $90 that first year. And that was over a 6-week time period. So it felt amazing when I got to that point.
Then more sessions.
And then the following fall, people wanted to come back for another session. And the people who couldn't come in the summer asked for that other session to come back. So I sold out the next coming up session. And then I continued selling out sessions and kept on changing what kind of sessions I teach, from waltz to salsa, to see like which kind of sessions are most popular with people, what do people like the most. And it ended up to the point that 2 years ago, I decided to move away from just hosting like 6-week sessions to have ongoing classes.
Chitsanzo struggled that first year.
And the first year I taught ongoing classes, it was hard. Like, I'm not going to kid you, it was hard. I was broke that entire year. Every single bit of money that I made was going back into it, was trying to convince people, like, hey, you should, like, try to dance. I went out at so many events trying to get people to, like, dance. It was ridiculous. And then, last year, at the end of it, I was like, yeah, I'll try one more half year. After this half year, I will kill it if it is not profitable.
He even wondered if it might be time to move on.
At the beginning of my last semester here, I was just so done with it. I wanted to actually move, close down the studio, move to Halifax, because Halifax had just opened. In Halifax, there's 2-3 new studios that had just opened. And at the time of me almost dropping everything, I knew already people in Halifax teaching, and I already knew that I could be teaching in Halifax at these 3 new studios that literally just popped up because they were teaching styles I specialize on. And it's kind of interesting that, like, the year where, like, everything seemed to, like, fall apart, it was fixing itself. And this where I'm at is, like, we're heading into a new year with less uncertainty than last year. A lot of more security about, like, people coming into the space, people coming into our studio, and with so much more hope than I anticipated. Because I was very close to closing it down.
For Chitsanzo, he had to step back and rethink his approach. The answer came from a job he had held previously.
My previous job was mentoring children and getting them into, like, the sciences, getting them excited about sciences in an after-school program that was funded by Dalhousie. And I worked for it for 2 years, and I thought, like, I fell kind of in love with teaching children, that I decided, like, hey, I still got this, all of these resources from teaching children, all of this experience from teaching children. I might as well start teaching them in the dance school instead of just having them, like, just having this, like, skill set that I developed and not apply it. And with teaching children and with teaching adults, I kind of got a breakthrough this year by essentially having the first couple that we had in our studio. They managed to learn the full tango syllabus that we taught them. And that full tango syllabus goes up to bronze level. They learned our full salsa syllabus. And they learned our, on top of like tango and our other syllabus, they also learned the full syllabus of all of our other things. And at that point, I personally was like, I can't kill it now. I can't stop now when like I wasn't just like succeeding like financially. I was also succeeding by like always getting in more people, always getting in new people.
Now, Chitsanzo is about to move into a new permanent space in the old Sacred Heart Church on George Street.
Luckily, through a good friend and a business partner, I'm able to move into the old Sacred Heart Church. That's where our future space will be. It will open up in September with classes for adults and children. And we were using the university as a space for a while. And then we're moving into the space this year because it was something that was planned a long time ago. But as I said, it's like I was planning to kill this. It was like there was huge uncertainty about having the space. It's like we didn't know that if we were going to get this space. Like me and my partners didn't know that we were going to get this space until January this year. And in between that time, we had opened up the studio there. And then we had to close it down, I think, 4 weeks later. And it was just devastating. And we had to move to two other places. Like, first, I moved to the Holy Angels building. But that didn't seem very feasible because of the... Just because, our classes weren't all filled up constantly at the time. So that's what it didn't seem feasible. But it was a wonderful space and it was beautiful for what it gave us. It gave us the opportunity to teach children there from like relays. I taught relays for 6 weeks in Holy Angels. And thanks to like the partnership of that, I was able to host a intensive in Halifax, and that I'm planning to bring back next year, where I brought down people who dance with like the biggest bands and teach like the biggest people. I was able to bring them from like Toronto and Winnipeg into Halifax, which doesn't happen very often, but I hope that they will come back next year for Sydney because this is the scene where I want people to grow. And it would be nice if we have, like, high-level talent come to Sydney.
Concept Creative Dance now welcomes all ages and all skill levels in all manner of dance styles.
Students are... That's the weirdest thing ever, is because the entire age range, if we exclude the kids' classes, is 16 up to 78. 78 was the oldest students we had. 16 was the youngest student we've had. And then for the others, for the kids, it's 5 to 8. And it's... The people that come to our classes, for the adults, is basically always people who want to try something new. It's people who want to... Like, I wouldn't say it's try something fancy. Want to learn something that is different. And I wouldn't consider ballroom dancing as fancy because ballroom dancing is everything else but fancy. Because It might, like, it's the most accessible kind of dancing because there is literally video tutorials everywhere. I just feel like when we get, like, people who want to try something new, we bring a part of the world to them. And most of the time, it's always getting that diverse group of everyone, like everyone. We have had international students in our space. We have actually our team for competitions is made up of international students. We teach them like for 2 semesters to hip hop competitively, and then we have their recreational classes, which are visited mostly by people from Cape Breton, mostly on the older group, because they all want to be, like, they all want to just be active, but find something that doesn't put too much stress on them. It's because ballroom adapts to your body. And for the kids, something that I really appreciate about the kids is, like, the kids we get are coming from other, like, disciplines, but they are coming to my studio because they heard that my studio is different. Because we don't compete our kids. We also don't compete our adults except for that one, like, group of adult dancers. We don't compete any of those people unless they want to.
Finally, I'd like to introduce you to Rose Frazier, the proprietor of Prince Street Auto. Rose came to Cape Breton in 2010 from the Philippines, and it was love that drew her here to our little island.
He was working in Singapore in the shipyards, and I was there too doing occupational health and safety. We were introduced to each other and decided that we were going to move forward from there, and here's where we ended.
So he's from Cape Breton originally, right?
Yes, Brador. He's from Brador.
Okay, so he's from Brador. And what was his name? His name's William?
Yes, William Frazier.
William Frazier. So you guys met in Singapore. You were both working for the same company.
No. William works for a drilling company at the time, and I worked for a construction company. We make the oil rigs, and once in a while we do audits in Singapore. I was based in Indonesia, and we had common friends, but we were not in the same company.
Okay, so mm-hmm. So you met through common friends, and
correct.
And do you thank those friends for introducing you now, or?
I do. He's probably one of the better decisions I made in my life.
So you meet William, and you decide that you're going to go forward. He's a pretty nifty guy. We're going to move forward and have a relationship. So at some point, you did decide that you guys were going to, you know, tie the knot and then choose Cape Breton as sort of your home base. So why did you guys decide to move to Cape Breton?
Okay, so when we got married in the Philippines. After the marriage, we decided that we were going to still keep working until such time that we decide to settle down. And when the baby is about to come, then we had to put our roots down. At the time, we were both in Singapore, and it wouldn't be good for the children to be born in a place where neither one of us was native. And we have decided that this would be home for us. So we came here, and now I have two beautiful children. They're ages 8 and 5, and this has been home since.
So I got to ask you this, because every Cape Bretoner always wants to know this. When you first arrived in Cape Breton,
mm-hmm.
First of all, what time of year did you arrive?
I came November 12th, midnight.
Okay, so you arrived at midnight in winter.
Correct. In what attire? I was wearing a very long flowy dress and a very thin sweater.
So perfect winter clothing for Cape Breton winter.
Yes, I suppose, and it was fine, and I never complained until I got to the truck. And ever since then, my house was up until 85, and I was still wearing shorts, and everybody was just taking off their sweaters, right? Of course, it's already changed. The house is now down to 72 or something. Oh, 65, sorry. But yeah, you have learned to change your clothing and everything since then, right? So
that was your first impression of Cape Breton, is just how cold it was? And
it was cold, and when I first came here, before I married him, it was like, because we lived out in the sticks, right? It's like an ongoing road, and I'm like, wait, the zombies are coming out now. I mean, anytime now, really. And you wait and wait, and oh my God, it keeps going. It's a dirt road. This is where we're going. Oh, my God. And I'm like, okay, there's a house. Okay, we're fine. It's where we live is very out in the sticks. But it was beautiful. I fell in love. I remember that day when I came. The following morning, there was bunnies and there was deers in our backyard. So that's really close encounter with nature, and you don't get that anywhere else. Not anywhere else I've lived anyway, so.
That nice closeness to nature that,
yes.
Okay, so now we're going to plug your business a little bit. So I want to ask you about the garage. So
yes.
What year did you purchase the garage?
We opened our doors April 18th, 2016. We are almost 2 weeks shy of being in business for 3 years. So we started with a small three-bay garage. We now have a small used car dealership, and we have a digital advertising business that I do, which is also located in 500 Prince Street, right? So it's grown from a small venture into a little bigger small venture. So, but it's been wonderful.
Were you sort of into cars before? Is that the reason why you went into starting a garage here, or did you see a need, or?
No, my father is, he's still alive. My father is a mechanic. However, I really didn't have any interest in it. My husband, he's an industrial mechanic. And when he seen that place was up for sale, he thought it was a great opportunity to put roots down, because we always planned on not having him spend the rest of his life working away, especially when he's got young kids, right? So it was funny because he always asked me, did you want a garage? I said, I don't know. I don't know what I'd do with one. And he's like, okay, do you think you'd like a garage? I said, maybe. And then he's like, okay, we're getting a garage since you want it. Okay, you wanted it, right? So I bought it for you. Here, run it for me. So that was how it all started. And ever since we opened, I've been there 40, 50 hours a week, and I have learned so much. And I make sure that I understand quite a bit of what's going on, because I have to explain it to people that comes through the door, right? So you can't really tell people what's going on if you don't understand it yourself. That's what I find.
And so now you're sort of full-service business. Like you said, you have the garage, you have a used car dealership, a digital advertising. And how many employees are you?
There is 4 full-time employees working in that location right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And any plans to expand in the future?
We have plans, and we will be making a future announcement, say, close to April. But I'd rather not disclose until it's all set in stone. Mm-hmm. But we are going to try and do a little bit more. It's always bad luck to say before it's all there, right? Oh, I thought, no. Mm. So, but anyway.
So now that you've lived here on Cape Breton Island for, you say, 10 years now, or going on 10 years?
Yes.
Thereabouts. Do you still love it as much as you did when you first saw?
Cape Breton is home.
Mm-hmm.
The love for the place always grows every day that I'm here. I don't imagine seeing myself being anywhere else, and I have grown to appreciate everything and everyone here. There's always good and bad in a place, but this is a good, safe place to raise your family. Everybody seemingly has a good touch to humanity. A lot of them are more often than not kind, or choose kindness. It's a wonderful place to be.
Just right. sexy touch. Oh, step in line with reality. That's the way it should be. Yeah. And there's no need in asking, cause you know you feel the same way too.
Special thanks to A.J. Balyan, Chitsenzo McConduire, and Rose Fraser for sharing their stories with me, and for showing all of us that Cape Breton is indeed open for business. On our final episode of The Story of Home, now that we've seen where we come from, where do we go from here?
Curating Cape Breton's Multicultural Mosaic, a dedication to diversity past and present, is a Coast 89.7 original production. We would like to thank the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Radio Meters program for its financial support of this series.